The following is message 5 of Jean Grueler sharing on the children and students given in Anaheim, California on the afternoon of September 27, 1989. Title of the message is The Importance of Children's Work.
Okay, any fellowship from last time? Anything that hasn't been clear? We have spent 4 weeks mainly covering some basic principles concerning the children, bringing the children to the Lord, concerning the training and the teaching of the children, and the fact that the children are God's gift and we are God's stewards. Now, so we've covered a lot of points, a lot of verses, this is kind of the foundation of what we want to do this term. So if there are any questions or anything that's not clear up till now, don't ask me what you're going to do in the children's meeting. We'll come to that. But anything in the scope that we've covered up till now that's not clear, or that you have something to ask, or you want me to say a little more about, anything, this is the time. It's all clear? Oh, go ahead. No, Amy. Right? No, Amy. Yes. Right. Right. Okay. If you go back and read the Genesis Life Study, the message number is in your outline. If you go back and read the Genesis Life Study, in fact, it was the only study assignment I gave out in 4 weeks was the Life Study of Genesis, Message 36, pages 481 to 490. Okay. In this section, broadly summarizes the stages of the fall from the Garden of Eden, right? Then the serpent came in. In the Garden of Eden, man was under God's rule, God's direct rule. God came and talked to them, right? And then man was directly under God's rule. And that's the way it should have been. Then man should have taken the tree of life and gotten God into him, right? And then God's rule would not only be from without, but from within, right? And then man would have been preserved. But the fall came, right? The temptation came, and man fell. That was the first step of the fall, right? Then the human conscience got activated, right? And then man was under the rule of his conscience. That part of the human spirit created in every man, that alarm system went off after the fall. And it was there to tell man, to justify or condemn man's actions, and to justify or condemn man and everything. So that is the first stage of the fall, from God's rule to self-rule, to the rule of conscience, okay? Then we find out that didn't work so well. Then Cain killed his brother, and eventually man became flesh, right? In the time of Noah. So man continued to fall further away from God's rule and away from the rule of conscience, from self-rule. So eventually, after the flood, God ordained that whoever shed man's blood, that man had the right to judge him and to kill him, right? That whoever killed someone, he could be killed by man. That is the foundation of human government. Right? If the God's rule is not there and the inward rule of the conscience is not there, then there has to be the outward rule of human government. Right? So that's the third stage. Then, even that didn't work so well, so eventually at the Tower of Babel, man rejected God entirely by Satan's instigation. That's called Satan's instigation. And man joined Satan in building that tower. That was an astrological symbol. Something to reject God altogether by Satan's instigation. So that was the final stage of the fall. At that point, God turned to a called race. He called Abraham, right? Okay. So in human terms, from the story, the side of humanity, the fall is complete at that point. It's gone as far as it can go. Man is one with Satan. Right? Man is one with Satan. Okay. So we have to rescue. We're all born into that. We're born into that. The fourth stage of the fall. Right? We're all born into that. So we have to be rescued. The first way to rescue out of that is human government, to restrict the fallen behavior, to limit it. You can't go out and kill people. You can't go out and steal, right? You can't go out and burn down people's houses. There's government ordained by God to preserve human society and to preserve humanity to some extent. If there is no government, when you have anarchy, then everything collapses, right? If there's no government, how could you be assured you'd get electricity or water or food or anything? Actually, all the basic necessities of life come to us under the protection of government. In places in the world where government is gone and there's anarchy, then it's hard to get a drink of water. Who's going to run the water company? And who's going to be sure that the pipes don't get broken by somebody? This is what the terrorists try to do, right? Is to create a state of anarchy. But what happens is that affects people's ability to live, to say nothing of humanity, right? So human society breaks down and humanity becomes depraved, right? So human government is a recovery from Satan's instigation, you see? That's to protect the human being and society, to preserve, so man can be preserved on the earth. Otherwise, man could wipe out mankind. Mankind could be wiped out. You realize? It could happen very, very quick. You see? Very, very quickly. Of course, we believe that more today, right? In this atomic age, in this nuclear age. Okay. But that external government only keeps us from the gross things, right? You don't drive down Ball Road at 115 miles an hour, right? Just at 50 miles an hour, right? It keeps the gross, it keeps some kind of limit there, right? But it's not very satisfactory. Because whenever government has its back turned, you would still do the things. So that's why you need to build up this internal function of the conscience. So that when the policeman's not there, you would still drive orderly on the right side of the street. You would still stop at the stop sign. You'd stop at the red light. And you wouldn't exceed the speed limit for the sake of the safety of other people. Right? So you'd be consider others. Because something is built up inside, the conscience. Right? So that brings you back a little further. That's an improvement. Right? It's just like all the naughty boys in school. When the teacher left the room, there's chaos. Right? That means the government goes and there's chaos in the room, right? I won't tell you some of the things I did, you know. In my day, we had inkwells there. And we had girls with pigtails, you know. And we had a lot of things. Okay. But as soon as you hear the steps in the hallway, everybody sits there. Smiling, waiting for the teacher to come in. You see, that means no conscience, but human government works to a certain extent. But, listen, by the time the students get to be to the 6th or 7th or 8th grade, then it shouldn't matter whether the teacher's there or not there. And the fact that it does matter today proves no development of conscience. I'm not bothered by naughty behavior of young children. Tell you the truth. Don't tell the children that, because I'll still correct them. But I'm not bothered. But I am bothered if the behavior doesn't change when I show up. If my children's behavior is the same when I'm there as when I'm not there, I mean naughty behavior, then I'm worried. Then I'm worried. Because that means not only human government doesn't work, no conscience. You see, no conscience. So we have to bring them back. We have to develop this inward function. This is in the created human spirit, not the regenerated spirit. And this created human function of conscience operates according to knowledge. That's why teaching works. Training works. You can train the conscience. It doesn't change the sinful nature. But it sets off the alarm. And it may not keep them from being naughty, but it can keep them from being corrupted. I would testify to you, I was very naughty. I was in trouble. I was fighting and so on. But I never did the evil things, the corrupting things. Many things I wouldn't do because something was built. I was afraid. I was afraid of God. That's not bad. The fear of the Lord is the beginning of wisdom. right? We need to be God-fearers. Cornelius was a God-fearer. We need to realize, hey, there's a God, and someday I'm going to have to answer for this. So that became a protection, this developing of conscience. But that's not the goal. The goal is to bring them back to God. Okay? No, Amy? This is a very important concept. A very important concept. So this is what we have to do. So there must be human government. That means there must be limitation and restriction on the children. They can't do what they want. They can't be allowed to do what they want. There has to be limits. Okay, we may consider whether the limits are here, or whether they should be out farther, or whether they should be in further. See, where the limit should be, that may be debatable. And that's a matter of opinion, right? But that there should be a limit, you can't debate about. We can debate whether we should be a little freer with them or a little stricter with them. Okay, that all depends on a lot of factors. That is somewhat related to culture, right? Different cultures. That's somewhat related. Some cultures let the children do anything they want for the first few years, and then when they come to school, they put them in a straitjacket. You know what I mean? They just reach to... Okay, that's one way. Anyway, there's a limit. But another person I said to, he said, the strictest time should be in the youngest years. That's the principle of swaddling clothes. You know what swaddling clothes? When a baby's born, you wrap them up tight. You see? Swaddling clothes. And then as they get older, you release them gradually. See? As the internal conscience is developed, you reduce the outward restriction. Okay, that's an argument. So where the line should be, okay, and when, that's all, you know, we don't have to argue about that, as long as there's a line, but that there must be human government, you see. So we shouldn't criticize one another. Parents shouldn't say, you know, criticize other parents. Of course, if there's no standard and no line and no restriction, of course, then we all need to repent. But as to where it should be, it depends on the child. I had four children. They were all different. What works with one child doesn't work with another child. I had one child, and the harder you would spank that child, the less that child would cry, and the stronger their will became. Strong-willed. This happened to be a girl. I had another child. I could look at that child across the room, and the child would begin to, eyes would tear. There's a different constitution, different makeup. They're born differently. So what works? It all depends. It all depends. But there must be a limit. There must be a limit, right? There must be a limit. Okay, now, all this is on the side of the human government, the training of the conscience, right? Even we had a point here on the outline of on conscience, that the major function of the conscience is to govern man, right? So instead of being governed outwardly by human government, it's governed inwardly by the conscience. But man must be governed. That is limited, restricted, right? Okay. But that's one side. This process is one side. The other side is represented by Abraham, the called race, with the promise, right? That's why on the lesson three, the seven stages of God's dealing with man: innocence, conscience, human government, right? From God's rule, self-rule, man's rule. We reverse this from Satan's instigation back to man's rule, back to self-rule, back to God's rule. But that's just one side. The other side is you have the age of promise from Abraham to Moses. And this we have to infuse in them, that God has chosen and called them to belong to him. And then you have the age of law, and that means we have to teach them what God is. The law is the testimony of the nature of God. We have to teach them what God is. And then you have the age of grace. You have to lead them to know Christ, to receive grace, to receive Christ. And then you have to bring them into some exercise of the kingdom today. Of course, that's a little further along. Mostly with the younger children, we have these six things. From Satan's instigation to man's rule. From man's rule to self-rule. from self-rule back to God's rule, right? That's on the one hand. On the other hand, we have to infuse them with the fact that they are chosen. They're sanctified. They're the called race. They're the real children of Abraham by faith. The promise is theirs. Someday. We have a whole unit that we developed one time using all God's calling in the Old Testament. God called Adam, and Adam ran away and hid. Someday he will call you. Don't hide. God called Cain and Abel, and Cain killed his brother, but Abel responded. So don't be like Cain, be like Abel. Someday God will call you. God called Noah. Someday God will call you. God called Abraham. Someday God will call you. God called Moses. Someday God will call you. The whole year we just put this in them. They're chosen by God. And someday he's going to come and get them to call them, you see. At the end of the first year we did this, years ago in Anaheim, in the boys' class, they gave a questionnaire out. They gave a piece of paper out to the boys, asked them a number of questions. One of the questions they asked them is, what impressed you the most this year? All the boys put down, the wording varied, they all put down, someday God will call me. That's wonderful. You see, they got to know that they are the chosen race. They're not common. And someday... This is with little 5- and 6-year-olds. Someday God's going to call them. You see? Okay, so that's an infusion. This is what I meant by the infusion of the promise. Then we have to infuse the nature of God. God is love, right? God is life. God is light. God is righteous. God is holy. All the things that God is, we have to infuse into them the knowledge of God. You see? So eventually they have to love God. We have a whole series of lessons on the Ten Commandments. And the ultimate conclusion is that we have to love God. And we have to love God's Word. You see? So this is to infuse them with the testimony of God. That's in the principle of the law as a child conductor. But that's from the positive side of the law. Right? Then we have to tell them about God's salvation in Christ. And prepare them to receive it. So these are parallel tracks. You see this view? These are parallel tracks. On the one hand, we're rescuing their humanity from Satan's instigation in order to bring it back to God. That's a little outward. And it has to be outward. Behavior has to be adjusted. Limits have to be there. The conscience has to be trained. Punishment has to be exacted. When they're wrong, they have to receive some kind of punishment. But what that punishment should be, that depends. I found out the more I would spank this one child, of course, I didn't do much spanking of my children. That may surprise you. When I was so naughty that I think 5 out of 7 days I got a licking from my father in growing up. With the belt, with a stick, you know, I mean, on my bare gluteus maximus. A real licking. I mean, not one of these wishy-washy things. My father was no wimp. He was a strong character. And I mean, I got it. So with my children, I don't think 5 times I gave them a solid licking. 4 children. Maybe 5 times total for all 4. You see? But my wife did a little bit. My mother broke a number of wooden spoons on me. You know, wooden cooking spoons. But my wife didn't break them. She used them. I found out the more you physically discipline this child, the stronger the will becomes. Then we have to find another way. But anyway, we can't let it go. You see, many things we may overlook temporarily, but eventually, when there is a pattern of behavior, we have to intervene to change it. Because habits become character. Habits become character. Habits that are repeated, form a pattern, that affects the character of the children. So we have to intervene one way or the other. So don't go away thinking that I'm for taking a big stick and beating all the kids all the time. Actually, I didn't do that myself. But you believe me, I have other ways. I have other ways, you see. Because I inherited a strong character from my father. I can use my strong character to subdue my children. I could, and I did. I have a stronger will than all my children. You believe me. So I but we have to find a way how to do it. But that's the preserving side. My only regret is I did more on that side than on the positive side. But gradually I got to realize the good thing was my wife did a lot on the positive side. Every night she sang songs with the children. She read the Bible stories to them. She prayed with them before they went to bed. Every night with all the children. You see. So she did the positive side. You see. I regret. I should have done more on that side. I gradually woke up as I, you know, this is the trouble. We have children when we don't know what we're doing, and by the time we know what we're doing, we can't have children anymore, right? So, anyway, eventually, I got to realize these two things have to go as parallel tracks. And we have to have this view. I was burdened. I didn't make this clear. I realized the seven stages of the seven dispensations. I didn't make that clear what I meant on the outline. So now you can see that these seven stages represent important principles, and we may say they are a type of how to bring children from Adam to Christ. How did God bring mankind from Adam to Christ? Through these stages of his dealing with man. Right? So, God's rule, self-rule, human government. To rescue man out of Satan's usurpation. That's on the one side. That's with humanity. That's for the sake of their humanity. Then, the promise. And the law as the testimony of God. And Christ as grace to them, infused into them. Right? That's on the positive. Of course, it's all positive. So I don't like to say positive and negative side. It's all positive. But one is positive for humanity, and one is positive for the spiritual future. We may say. Okay? Because you may train. I worked with a man, my boss. He was also a German. Robert D. Heitzman. And he was executive vice president. He was my boss of the company that I was in business. And that man, he had a strong conscience. He wouldn't do the things other men in business did. But he wasn't regenerated. He was just a very good, moral man. He didn't smoke, he didn't drink, he didn't curse, he didn't tell stories. But he also hardly believed in God. He just got trained. He got brought up in a very good way. If that's all we do, we miss the boat. You see? We're not. Our goal is not to have good human beings. Our goal is to have vessels to contain the treasure. Preserve vessels. We do want good human beings, but for God's purpose. Our goal is not good human beings. Our goal is the fulfilling of God's purpose. God's purpose does require good human beings, proper human beings. Whose humanity was more proper than the Lord Jesus, right? He submitted himself to his parents at the age of 12 when he knew he had to be about his father's business. But he still was subject to them. He became a carpenter. He learned carpentry. He was raised up by them, right? We've covered that in the other class. So this is the pattern. There must be a proper humanity. Okay? Does that help to tie some of the loose ends together? You got the view now? I hope you would have the view. Yes. Try to speak this to one another. Try to talk to each other about it. You see? When we first began, I got thrust into this in 1977 in Anaheim. I got thrust into this children's matter. And I just began to read the Bible, consider what the verses, consider my experience, and seek the Lord, and we began. And the things developed. The more you speak it, the more it will develop. Yeah, okay.
Saying someone's conscience hasn't been trained so much when they were young.
Right.
Or it was trained, but because of outside factors, it was damaged.
Right.
In your experience, how old before when there's damage done and the conscience is sensitive, is there any way, like in the older years, even in the 20s or whatever, to reverse damage or to touch someone's conscience?
It just is more difficult as the years go by. There is a way. Actually, you have a whole chapter in the experience of life on dealing with conscience. I know what Brother Lee said in his lesson on the experience of life recently. You see, I know what he said. But I also know that when you're young, especially you young trainees, to go through such dealings is a good exercise. you still need to learn to live Christ. And that's Brother Lee's burden today. But that doesn't contradict what he said. Because I asked him. I said, what about experience of life? I said, what should we do? Just drop that? No, no. No, in fact, in Taipei, that was part of the curriculum. In Irving, that was part of the curriculum, right? You were required to bring that book and study it. So this is an exercise. Let me put it this way. When you go to learn to play the piano, you have to put, the teacher first would put your fingers on the key. This one finger goes on this key, this finger goes on this key, the third finger goes on this key, fourth finger, fifth finger. And then she would have you go, da, 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 da. Not very living, not very spontaneous, but a good exercise. You see? Eventually, you can play Chopin, you can play Beethoven, you can play Tchaikovsky, right? Quite spontaneously and freely. But if you didn't, you see? But our goal is not da, 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 da. That's not our goal. But we have to have some kind of training, you see, some kind of training. Then your spirit will be more useful.
Because I'm thinking of, like, somebody I know, and I want to touch their conscience, but I don't know how.
An unsaved person or a saved person? Yeah, then you have to pray. Actually, they need to be saved. Now, at that point, they can be saved. Then the Lord will have a way, you see, by His life within them. No, with adults, it's different. They need God's salvation. You don't need to go through a long process. You just bring God's salvation to them. And then by the Lord's life, they can learn. Da, 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 da. But also for you, you all need such an exercise. I'm so grateful to the Lord. After Brother Lee gave this training in Taipei, before it was published in English, we had a brother in New York. He got the messages in Chinese, and he gave us a weekly training on the dealing with the clearing the past, dealing with sin, dealing with the conscience. That became the foundation of my spiritual experience, all those dealings. Now, we're not for dealings. We're for living Christ. But you believe me. You can never play Tchaikovsky if you've never gone da, 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 in one way or another. I know now they have modern methods of teaching piano, but there has to be some kind of basic A, B, C, D, E. Right? At some point, you have to learn the alphabet. To be useful, at some point, you have to learn the books of the Bible. Right? You have to learn the basic things. There's no substitute for just learning the basic things. And see, and the basic exercises. But eventually, it's not to learn to live by our conscience, it's to live by Christ. Because now we're the believers. You see. But Paul still said, I exercise myself always to have a conscience void of offense toward God and men. Right? But that was not the goal. The goal is to live Christ. But now we're talking about children. Let's come back. So drop that. That's why you kind of have to put brackets around this course, right? If you try to take experience of life, if you try to take Tuesday and Thursday morning sessions of Brother Lee and then apply it here, it's not going to work. We're talking about two different realms. We're really in two different realms. In this realm of children, it has the proper use of culture. In the realm of living Christ, we drop culture, right? There's no contradiction. As long as you see, we're in two different ballparks. When you go to the football field, you don't bring a baseball bat. Right? But a baseball bat is needed to play baseball. Yeah, but you're in the football field. So now you need a football.
This is the end of side one. For the remainder of the message, please turn the cassette over.
You see? So we're talking about two different things. But we, the believers, we have to live Christ. If we only live this way, that's not good enough. But to bring our children, we have to take this way. So this is the misunderstanding among the saints for all these years. Some would stress so much the character and the raising up, and they would focus all their attention on the children. But they never bring them to Christ. And some would say, no, the Lord will save the ones that are chosen by Him someday. So they ignore the character and they grow up to be barbarians. then it's hard to rescue them. You see? Okay. Anything else? It's a long answer to a short question.
Into the kingdom. That comes after salvation.
Yeah, that's to complete the outline. That's so that you can see these are the seven stages, seven dispensations. And I include that because today in the church life, the kingdom isn't exercised to us. So it's not just a future as a dispensation or as an age, it's still future. But as an exercise, it's still today. So eventually, the peak of our conferences with our high schoolers was the conference on the kingdom. That was the high point. Were you there, Kevin? Yeah, you were there. That was the high point. You see, not too many came up to that. But this is after 5 years or 4 years of twice a year, and week by week, doing something with them. We brought them up to this point where we did speak to them concerning the kingdom. But the high schoolers, the upper grades, they got something positive. So we still need to come to this point, something concerning the kingdom. But that's after they're saved. That's surely after they're saved. So I just put it down here, right? Still, there's some aspect that our young people need to know. The kingdom exercise. Okay? Okay. Basically, what we've covered to this point is so we could have a view, the primary responsibility here is with the parents. But even when we're doing something with them, we do have certain limits. See? If I have a class, okay, when I was in Anchorage recently, the brothers were asking me, the brothers and sisters were talking. They want to ask a lot of things about children, so we had a lot of talk. Then the Lord's Day morning came, they said, okay, now show us how to do it. You take the boys' class. I said, well, you know, I haven't done a boys' class in years. What are you on with them? You know, I come in cold. He said, anyway, just do it. They told me what they were on. So the night before, I read the verses. I got myself ready. Then I did the class. Now, among these boys, there was quite, these were 9-year-old boys. There were about 7 of them. Okay. So still, there has to be some, okay, now they have to have, I have to get their attention. Well, I may do it by telling them a story about when I was a naughty boy or something like this, you know. But eventually, I have to restrict them. They can't run off. They can't run out of the room. You know, no, we're not finished yet. I have something else to tell you. There have to be some limits. There have to be some. And also by speaking to them. We were on the life of Joseph. I infused their conscience a lot concerning Joseph's temptation in Potiphar's house. That was the lesson. That's where they were. So they said, give this lesson. So I trained their conscience with the word. You see, with the word. Some temptations you just have to run away from. Right? Okay, even you suffer unrighteously afterwards. At least you kept yourself from sinning in a bad way. You see? So this is the training of their conscience with the word. A lot of Bible stories that can train the conscience. Then limiting their behavior. That's more on the human government side, right? So showing them there is a limit. Right? Yeah, Meryl.
Well, I want to share something about my motivation for participating in children's work. And you know, maybe you deserve to laugh at me. And if I do, you know, fine, laugh. But it's good to be celebrated. You know, I share with all of you the vision that you want to build up the Lord's country.
Right.
The Lord wants us to be all things to all men for that
right.
purpose. And he cares about children. So, of course, for that reason alone, we can preach the gospel to children.
Right.
And your parents in the church. But in addition to that, personally, because I am a parent,
right.
I have a motivation to preach
right.
the gospel to children. Because I feel that it's part of the human responsibility that I have
right.
for my own offspring.
Right. Right.
And after that, more important, our education is.
Right.
You know, I mean, my parents supported me throughout my education. And I think maybe if they hadn't done that, then I wouldn't have been able to get a higher education.
Right.
It's been a great profit not only for me, but continues to the Lord. And so I bear a responsibility for my children to educate them, whether that means financial support or whatever. And if those things are important, how much more important is it that they should have a proper marriage partner? You know, probably the most important thing in our lives is who we marry. That's whether or not we love the Lord and serve him. And that's something my grandfather, believe it or not, impressed me with from as long as I can remember. And I was 5 or 6 years old, and every time I visited him, he would say, the most important thing is your marriage. And then he passed away, of course. And the Bible in the Old Testament says, lands and houses are from fathers, but a good wife is from the Lord. So it doesn't even say that I can give my children to father and spouse. And I wouldn't want to take their free will away from them, making such a child of children. But I consider it my responsibility to evangelize their generation
right.
So that they would have as many possible people to choose from.
Right.
You know, if it's 3 people, my son's age, in the church to choose from when he grows up, he might not make it. You know, he might be tempted to go out in the world because there's nobody suitable, humanly suitable for him to manage it. And, you know, if I want to make sure their houses aren't broken into and robbed, I can teach these children today so that they won't grow up without it.
Right. Okay, we have to have this view. Let's come to the outline today, and don't be bothered. A lot of points, but now we have 4 weeks to cover some things regarding children's work. Today's message is on the importance of children's work. The first point is children's work is needed. You have to believe that children's work is needed. For society to be proper and fruitful, education is needed, right? Society takes care of a lot. Takes a lot of concern over the training and education of children. And today, of course, we're quite concerned because in America, we're not up to the standard of some other countries in education. And so there are all kinds of conferences and consideration. How can we beef up education? Because we know that the strength and the welfare of our country and of society depends upon the education of our children. So in the church life, the same concept is true. Actually, the strength of the church depends on what kind of job we do with this younger generation that will be the next generation in the Lord's recovery. How strong the church life will be, how strong the Lord's recovery will be, has a lot to do with how do we bring up our children today from the very young years. So we have to have a children's work to educate and to raise up our children properly. We shouldn't be so unbalanced that we neglect. This is an education work we're doing. This is a raising up, bringing them up properly to be proper, productive members of society, to be proper human beings so that they could be useful, right? So they would be fruitful members of society, so that they could be productive members. Then society can be better. Right? Of course, our goal is not to improve society, but we do need to have this kind of view in the church life. The church life will be better off. The church life will be stronger if we raise and educate our children properly. And then at the same time, we're leading them to be saved. So these two things go on. These two things go on. We've covered this in some to some extent before. The education and the raising up of the children on the one hand, and the leading them to be saved. This is what children's work is for, to do these jobs. This is with our children. We have to start with our children, right? We have to take care of the ones whom God has given us. We're responsible. Well, they're the parents' responsibility, but here we are in the church life. And we have a kind of society. You may call it. The church life is a kind of society, a kind of communal life, right? We have a relationship. We're concerned for one another, right? We like to help one another. We like to bear one another's burdens, right? We like to supply one another. So together, we can help and encourage one another in doing this job. Yes, the primary responsibility is the parents. But now here we are in the church life. Just like the primary responsibility of every brother in the church life is to provide for his family's livelihood, right? You have to provide the livelihood of your family. But sometimes a brother is sick. He had an accident, and he can't work, and there's no food. Then what shall we do? We say, well, it's your responsibility. Then the family starves? No. Then we would go to provide something to him, right? We would care for one another. In the same principle, the responsibility is the parents, but here we are. We need to help one another. I may be strong on this point, but you may be strong on the other point. With my wife and I in the early years, it was quite a good balance because I was strong on one side. She was strong on the other side. Eventually, we both came out about the same after a number of years, right? With her view, with her, what she brought, and with what I brought, eventually I changed and she changed. Then we both came out about the same. Eventually, our kids got to know it doesn't matter who you ask, you're going to get the same answer. You see? In the early years, it was check with... What did your father say? Or I would say, what did your mother say? Then whatever I said, she would back up. Whatever she said, I would back up. Then if we didn't agree, we'd go behind closed doors and settle it. If they have some fellowship to how to handle it next time. But whatever she said, I agreed with. Whatever I said, she agreed with. But eventually, by this kind of bearing the burden together, we both speak the same thing. And I'll tell you something now. I have a son and a daughter over 30, and they both say the same things that we said. You see? So this is, you see, how we can help one another. How we can help one another in the church life. So we do need to bear the burden corporately for all our children. I said bear the burden. I didn't say responsibility, right? The responsibility is the parents, but the burden is the churches. So we can help one another as parents and as serving ones. Okay, so the first thing is we have to raise them, educate and raise them up properly and lead them to be saved. Then, and here we come, we can reach other children with the gospel through our children. All the little children have friends. This is a big fishing pond, right? All the little children flock together like a flock of birds. They swim together like a school of fish, right? Our place, when our kids were little, our place was always crawling with kids, the neighbors' kids. We like to supervise, so we would tell our children, you bring them to our house, and we provide things for them there. And so we could watch over the situation. There's a good fishing pond. So our children all have friends that they meet in school. They come over after school, right? So we can reach other children with the gospel through our children. But listen, our goal is not just other children. Through those children, we have the door open into households, into other households. We have to see. We have to have our vision enlarged in this manner. We're not just here for the raising up of our children. We're here for the Lord's move. We're here for God's economy. We do have to raise up our children. We do have to lead them to Christ. Then through them, we can help other children. We can gain other children. But through those other children, we get an entrance into homes, into households. So we can gain households through the children. Did I tell you how my mother got saved in this class? Oh, okay. I told it in San Jose. I'll tell you how my mother got saved. In England, after the First World War, there were some brothers. They were exclusive brethren from the Brethren Assembly. They went out, and my mother lived in a poor working class area of Newcastle, England. And these men, they were businessmen, and they were greengrocers. And they would rent a little room, a little place, a little storefront. And they would invite all the street kids in, the kids playing on the street, you see. It's not like today. Even when I was young, all the kids played on the street, right? It was pretty safe. Today it's a little different. But anyway, they gather all the kids in, you see, and they teach them gospel songs, they teach them Bible verses, they tell them stories, and they help them to be saved. And after they listened to them for an hour, they would give them an apple. Listen, to get an apple after World War I in a poor neighborhood in England, that was a treasure. I mean, in the family, they got an apple at Christmas time, you know. So that he would bring a piece of fruit, a little bunch of grapes, a little something, you see, from their greengrocer store. And they would entice them a little bit, right? But they preached the gospel. My mother got saved. Then they would invite all the parents to come and listen to the memory verses and listen to the songs of the children. They'd set up a meeting in the evening. They'd get all the parents to come, and they'd preach the gospel to the parents. And the assembly in that town began in that way. The brethren assembly in that place. And through that way, salvation came to my mother's house. There was no history of salvation in my mother's house. My father's family for generations were godly people, but not in my mother's house. That was the first generation. Then she got saved, and her two brothers got saved, and her mother got saved. Her father had died by then. So they were a poor family. But salvation came through the children's work. So you believe me, if we take care of children, we'll have a wide open door. These won't be cold doors, right? You're tired of knocking on cold doors? Then here's the way to get warm doors. From the sisters in the neighborhood, you gather in some children, right? With your children, especially, we're talking now to the sisters in the church lot. You see, we'll come to this. But anyway, our goal is to gain other households with the gospel through our children. Then this will gain the increase for the building up of the body of Christ with and through our children. Notice the two prepositions. With our children. By gaining them, we build up the church life and build up the body of Christ. And through them, we gain others. And we build up the church life and we build up the body of Christ. Underline with and through. I should have put it in italics or something. With and through our children. Then, eventually, children's work is needed to train young people to serve the Lord with the gospel in junior high, high school, and college. We hope all our junior high, high schoolers, and college students could serve the Lord with the gospel. See? It's hard for me to go on the junior high campus, but we got our kids there every day. Then if we can use our children in junior high and high school, right? It's hard for me to go down to a college campus and act like I'm a college student. I mean, you know, it's hard. I can't fake it. Right? I'm not 25 years old anymore. But listen, we have our students there. Then through them, we can do a work on the campuses to serve the Lord with the gospel in the junior high schools, in the high schools, and in the colleges. Then the children's work is needed to strengthen the development and growth of the church life. This is in the principle of strengthening society by education. So, by the proper children's work, the development and the growth of the church life is strengthened. And then, children's work is needed to ultimately produce full-time trainees for the Lord's move. We hope instead of 70 trainees, we could have a few hundred trainees raised up by us for a few years, you see. Then we wouldn't have to do so much remedial work, right? We would have done an educational job for a number of years, right? We wouldn't have to be telling you all to memorize the books of the Bible because we did it in the first grade, right? You understand? I'm not blaming you. Praise the Lord. The Lord's salvation came and you came in and you're here in this training. We're all happy for all of you. I appreciate you all. But ultimately, the children's work is to produce trainees for the full-time training, to give 2 years to serve the Lord. Then out of that, a small number may give the rest of their life to serve the Lord, but all the rest will go back to an ordinary occupation for the Lord's move and serve with a job, right? Eventually, children's work is needed to provide a strong future for the Lord's recovery. There's a brief summary. These are at least some of the arguments, some of the reasons why we need children's work, okay? Just to give you an impression, our view is not narrow, it's very, very broad. You see? Then, children's work is an important part of the Lord's new way, Romans 2. A, to open the homes of all the brothers and sisters to have children's meetings. We hope that all the families with children would open their homes during the week, sometime, to have a meeting with their children and their friends. We hope many sisters whose families are raised and who have more free time would also open their homes and gather the neighborhood children in, right? This, B, will help more saints to function. Listen, the best way to be living is to take care of others. Take care of others. You believe me. I don't like to say too much, but tell you the truth, my wife has gotten more help from teaching the children over all the years. That has made her more living. You see, she comes back inspired after giving them a lesson on the Lord's life or on the Lord's salvation or something. Oh, she's just full. Her spirit's exercised. She's flowing over. Then she wants to keep me up all night telling me about this wonderful lesson she just gave because she's full of the Word. It's not bad, right? This helps more saints to function. The best way to function is to help others, to speak something to others. Then, see, and that's part of the Lord's new way, see, to visit new homes. Through our children, we can gain an entrance into new homes. D, to gain households. E, to build up the church life. So children's work is a very important part of the Lord's new way. It has to be in this principle of the Lord's new way. It's not just that we have a few experts and they know how to lecture to the children and so we turn over all our children to them. No. In the Lord's new way, everybody has to function. We like to stir up everybody. You believe me, you can do it. You can do it. You at least know one chorus. You at least know one Bible verse. You at least know one story. Right? That's all. Start. Just do it. Don't wait. Don't wait. I know a lot of parents are asking, and we come in the next point, children's work is multifaceted. Many ways, many places, many times, many materials, many persons. So everybody right away says, well, give us the materials and we'll do it. I say, you do it and we'll give you the materials eventually. The best way to do it is to do it. Don't wait for the handbook. Don't wait for the lesson book. Don't wait for something to be put in your hands. You have the Bible. You have the Spirit. You have the Lord. You have some songs. It's good enough. Just do it. But that doesn't mean that we don't need the development of materials. And we're very burdened. But that's a long-term project, to develop more materials. But it's not, we're not interested in a Sunday school quarterly, that the whole recovery on this Lord's Day is on this lesson, or this week is on that lesson. No, 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 no. What we like is lots of packages, lots of units, 6-week units, 12-week units, whatever. Lots of things from all different angles, from the side of character, from the side of behavior, from the side of the Bible, from the side of God, from the side of the characters, Bible characters, from the side of all kinds of things, the care of the body, all kinds of things. We like lots and lots and lots of... So then, as we do something with the children, we have some resources that we can use for the long run. But I tell you the truth, I'm very nervous about providing too many materials. Now, that may sound strange, but I am a little nervous. But on the other hand, when you go to contact new ones and gain new families and they don't know... They don't know the Old Testament and New Testament. You know, there are people in America, they don't know that the Bible has an Old Testament and a New Testament. And you tell them John 1:14, they don't know what John means, they don't know what 1 means, and they don't know what 14 means. Oh, yeah. We hired one of the top lawyers in this country, and he said, you have to excuse my ignorance, but you have to show me a Bible. So we bought him a Bible with a nice leather cover. We had his name put on it. Then we had an hour to explain to him the Old Testament, the New Testament, the books of the Bible, chapters, verses, the index in the front, how to look up. He had no idea. A 62-year-old man. He went to Sunday school as a kid in liberal denominations. He had no idea that the Bible has 66 books. How many in the Old Testament? How many in the New Testament? Good, you got something out of your other class. You see? He had no idea, you see? So we do have new people. They don't have any idea. They don't know whether Adam came before Moses or after Peter. They have no idea. Oh, listen, they don't know. Listen, our own children don't know too much. Sorry to say. But anyway, okay. So we have to do this kind of work. So we do need some materials. How did I get off on this? Anyway, because I know this is a big thing. Everybody's putting pressure on me. Give us materials. Give us materials. Give us. I resisted for a long time. Eventually, we let out what we had, and then I regretted afterwards. But anyway, there are saints working on materials. We do need some materials. But we're not interested in unifying anything. We're not interested in doing a Christianity work. We like to provide a great variety. Many ways, many places, many times, many materials, many persons. Okay? So this is our view. Children's work is multifaceted. So the whole point of this outline today is the importance of children's work. Now, next Wednesday, we will talk about home children's meetings, or children's home meetings. I guess it's titled Children's Home Meetings. Okay, children's home meetings. So we'll start to talk about it in a little more detail. Today, I'd just like to give you this overview of the importance so we can have a broad view. Okay? Okay, well, the time's up. I'm not finished, but the time's up, so we'll stay with the time. I would ask you, if you have not taken the time to go over the outlines, I have not given any assignments in this class, right, other than the one that I printed on the sheet, and then I didn't mention it when we covered the conscience. I would encourage you, go back over these first four outlines. Spend a little time so that you could have a good question. You see, Brother Lee, even Brother Lee likes to know what your questions are. No questions mean you probably didn't spend any time with it, because it's not possible that you understand all this thoroughly. I've been working on this for 15 years, and I don't understand it thoroughly, to tell you the truth. So, and some of my thinking has been very rushed in this class, because we just have an hour. So I would encourage you. What?
When we get into the practice, we're going to have a lot of questions.
I know. But that's what worries me. Without an adequate foundation in the truth, I don't have anything to say to you about the practice. I'm more concerned with the first four messages as a foundation. Otherwise, you build on the sand. You go out and do a practice, but you won't have a foundation for it. I know, Peter. That's why every place I go, they want to talk, what should we do in this case, and what should we do in this case? And I come, I don't want to talk about that. I want to enlarge your view. It's like Brother Lee said. He doesn't want you to repeat points. He wants you to have a view. Then you speak, what have you seen? I tell you, if you see, then whatever you do will be all right. If you don't see, if you do everything right, it won't work. You get my point? I'm not rebuking, but I've been at this a long time. I know the problem. I've been resisting. I've been fighting this problem for 12 years, since 1977, when I first began to speak in the churches about children's work. I gave a conference, 10 messages on children's work, and all the questions were, what do we do with this? And what do we? I don't care what you do with that. I like you to have a view. Once you have a view, you see, then tell you the truth. Many, many ways, many places, many this, many that, right? Many ways, many places, many times, many materials, many persons. Everything's all right. But without a view, you do everything right, it won't work. You understand, Peter? So I know. I'm glad you brought this up. That gives me a chance to put a P.S. on this meeting. Now I owe you 5 minutes. Okay, go ahead.